Warning, the following podcast contains mature language and potential spoilers. Listener discretion advised. We need to do new one. But I just said it exactly like say the other one.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Marvel superheroes have arrived. The Marvelous in America's
Fantastic Four.
Spider-Man.
Iron Man.
The Marvel superheroes have arrived.
You did that yourself, right? You mixed all that?
Yeah, it's a mix of the theme music for the Marvel superheroes, the X-Men theme, the Avengers United We Stand theme, and then clips from a bunch of other stuff as well.
No, it's really well done.
Thank you.
It's like one of my favorite things to listen to.
We're 3 years into this.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I thought he earned it.
We haven't made it to three yet.
We're not?
No, we're not at three yet. We've passed two, but we haven't made it three because Tumblr's like, hey, you're 2 years old, like 6 months ago.
So. Tumblr. Welcome to the Marvel Superheroes Podcast. I'm Illegal Machine, and with me is
Diablo Frank,
Mr. Fix-It.
And today we're going to be talking about
Dead of Night, Werewolf by Night.
Bye.
Good luck saying the fucking name.
This was a series by Max Comics, the adult fucking Marvel comic. Eh? From what was it, 2009?
We should have probably been like the Max Podcast.
Well, are they still around?
No. Max? No. No.
That was a limited?
It was another one of those things that just sort of petered out after a while.
Okay,
it didn't catch on. It didn't. Well, I mean, okay,
it's
name.
Broke ass Vertigo, right? Is all it is, right?
Kind of a broke ass Vertigo. Yeah. Name some Max series that don't involve the Punisher or not written by Garth Ennis.
Didn't they have like some kind of double book where they would have like these two heroes, unusual heroes put together?
They did. Well, they had Strange Tales, but that wasn't Max.
Then Swamp Thing do a series? Man Thing.
Yeah, that's my point. You've made my point. Yeah.
All right. Our writer on this book is Dwayne Swierczynski.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Artist Miko Swana?
Swayan, maybe? Swan? These are very talented individuals with fucked names.
Well, they're just normal names probably from wherever they're from.
Probably like Bob Joe Smith.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
It's like Mohammed.
I can pronounce Mohammed. That's pretty straightforward, honestly.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. Well, yeah, I'm not that. Hey, so we read the first three issues, right? This is a limited.
Four issues total.
We actually read four issues, not three. That's an error on my part, and I apologize. So this is a Nikon series for Mac Comics. Yeah. The Marvel wing for more adult.
Right. And technically, the Mac stuff wasn't supposed to be in continuity. Some of that stuff has bled over. Specifically, the Alias series featuring Jessica Jones was a Mac series, and that's now part of the core Marvel continuity. I think the Punisher stuff didn't end up crossing over?
I believe so.
But in particular, like they did a lot of horror stuff. I think Son of Satan had a miniseries.
The zombie book.
The Simon Garth one. Was it Kyle Hotz who did that one?
I believe so. Yeah.
And those are just locked away, and they're locked away because again, it's adult content. There's boobies. There's cursing. Oh, that Shane of the She Devil that Frank Cho did,
huh?
Yes, butts as well. And when Frank Cho drew Shane of the She Devil, he might as well have had a front butt because they were biggins. And then they reprinted it and the trade they covered her up, so it's like, well, us trade raiders kind of got ripped off in that respect. But anyway, so they did their own version of Werewolf by Night, and it wasn't tied into the 70s comic. Either of you guys have history with Werewolf by Night?
I read the early Paul Jenkins. There was a run by Paul Jenkins that I read.
Okay, given that I just mentioned that it's a 1970 series and you're saying the early stuff?
Well, I meant Paul for this.
Okay, so Paul Jenkins did a Max series then?
Yeah. Well, not a Max series. It wasn't pre-Max.
Part of that Strange Tales thing?
Yeah, I want to say yeah, because that was when Warren Ellis and them were writing stuff.
Was it Leonardo Manco who was doing that or somebody else?
I don't remember the artist. I just remember the series ended with a cliffhanger. They didn't finish the story.
Okay.
So I think they got in like 8 or 9 issues and the telling you could like they just dropped. That's when Warren Ellis was writing Hellstorm.
Well, if that was the same time, that was pretty early on then because Hellstorm was the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Well, I think that Strange Tales series was in the late 90s.
So, but it was about that time where you had a lot of British writers writing these horror books for them and they all just dropped off.
Yeah.
They just dropped off. They didn't finish them out.
Well, I think the bankruptcy stuff was happening around those times too, so that might have played a part.
Well, yeah, that probably played a big part of it.
But was the Liam Sharp Man Thing in that book as well?
I don't remember that part. I just remember the Werewolf by Night was one of the one I was reading, and I was reading Warren Ellis's Hellstorm, and that was it.
Okay. What happened to that miniseries anyway, or that strip or whatever it was? Is this an anthology you're saying?
Well, it wasn't an anthology. It was based on the character we're reading about right now. Oh man, it's been so long since I've read him. But basically, he he's morphing into the wolf at night, and the wolf is doing all this crazy shit, killing people. He's waking up in the daytime having to deal with it. And it was the build up to how he's going to confront the wolf. And then I think like after issue 9, it just stopped. So you never got resolution on it. Okay. I think the last issue was him dealing with some creature in the sewers. And I'd have to go back and touch base on it. But it was good. I remember enjoying it because I've always liked a lot of Paul Jenkins' writing. So
yeah. And what about you, Mac? Any experience with Werewolf by Night before?
Only wolf I know is Harvey Keitel.
Okay, I don't know if y'all know this about me, but like my first favorite monster was werewolves and Wolfman. I like the feral nature. I like the primacy of it. I like the freedom that came with that. And I think I was in second grade. I got some old hand-me-down clothes, and we ripped them up and painted my face up, and I got to become a Wolfman for one Halloween.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I liked Wolfman. I was like, yeah, okay. So, Wolfman and the Nard.
Right, Monster Squad.
Not nah, Teen Wolf, dude.
Teen Wolf.
Have I ever told you my Monster Squad story?
You're about to right now.
Okay. Nah. My father, for while he was the concession stocker at movie theaters. And one day he just picked me up. I was going to go over to his place for a weekend, and we just went to movie theater. He'd be stocking the concessions, and so I didn't have anything I needed to be doing, so I'd just go and pick whatever movie I wanted to watch while that was happening. And so I didn't get to see Monster Squad all the way through until a few years later on video, but I got to see the majority of the movie theater hopping throughout the course of that day. It was that and The Untouchables. And so those movies will always take me back to that one day where we did the concession stocking.
What a bizarre pair of movies.
Yeah. and now, did you each time walk in, were even close to where the last one left off, or were you?
There was a lot of overlap and stuff I'd seen before. That kind of thing happened a fair amount. Yeah, okay. Wolfman has Nards. Oh, no, because they kicked him in the Nards.
I think it was that he says kick him in the Nards. Wolfman doesn't have Nards, and he kicks him in the Nards.
Wolfman has Nards. Yeah, and it's by the way, have y'all seen that one recently? That one's still an awesome movie.
Yeah, it was on Netflix not too long ago.
What the fuck? Hold on. Fuck you. I fucking hate. Fuck you. What it does is it just fucking out of nowhere randomly be like, your virus is out of date. It's like, so why the fuck didn't you tell me that when I first turned the goddamn thing on? You're going to wait till I'm fucking recording shit. Fuck you. So anyway, so.
Did it not record some?
No, it's fine. It's just interrupted us while we were doing stuff.
So in the middle of it's going to say, your Windows needs to be updated.
Yeah. Bullshit like that. Story. But yeah, no, Monster Squad holds up really well. And actually, I think that might have been one of the first movies I ever saw that made explicit reference to the Holocaust and Holocaust survivors.
Yeah. The numbers. The old man.
He's a scary old man. It turns out he's a Holocaust survivor. He's got the numbers on his arm. They ask him about it. He kind of obliquely talks about how, oh yes, there are monsters. I totally believe in monsters. And you know that was a Shane Black written movie.
Yeah, I remember you told me that.
No way, for
yeah.
Real?
Yeah. That's one of the first things he sold. That was before Lethal Weapon.
The third best.
It is an awesome one. So yeah, and that,
I haven't seen it in so long. I would like. That should have been our Halloween podcast. We all sit down and
watch. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's an option. but also I love the Universal Monsters as a kid. Not as much for the movies because they play that stuff on like channel 20 and 26 back in the day, the old black and white stuff, but because you could go to Toys R Us and they had the Universal action figures of Dracula, the Mummy, Creature from the Black Lagoon. You remember those?
Yeah.
They were all glow in the dark.
Yeah.
So are you talking about the ones that glow in the dark? They didn't have movement, right? Or if they had movement, it was
no,
just
they had
arms?
Movement. They were like Star Wars, Kinder Star Wars, where it was those, at the shoulders and hips and the neck.
No, I don't
remember
those
at all.
No, the ones I remember, like literally only the arms would move, but they were in a set pose.
Uh-huh. I might have been kind of like, thinking one.
Yeah, like about. They were like army soldiers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, the ones that, like I said, they were the same. They were three and three quarters, whatever the G.I. Joe size was, Star Wars size. Same level of articulation, similar sculpts. Everybody who had a cape, they would turn it into like a bullshit sort of jacket where the little thin plastic would go into the armholes. Nope. And the packaging was all black with like a white outline of the monster's face. And they made sure that all the figures glowed in the dark, and including the wolf man. So like his face, yeah. Anyway. They made his, like part of his face human just so they could make that part glow in the dark. And they even had like some play sets. I think they did like a Frankenstein's Laboratory or a House of Dracula or something. So yeah, so I definitely had affection for the Universal Monsters because of that. And then they also had Power Records. And the one I remember the most is the Monster of Frankenstein. It had the Mike Lugar, which was gorgeous. And it was actually a very faithful adaptation of the Frankenstein novel. Because when I was a kid, they had like a kid version of the story where it was more easy reader, more simple, silly written, I guess, or pared down. But it was still really spooky and graphic. In particular, I was always haunted by the vision. I don't know if y'all remember, but Frankenstein, the monster forces Frankenstein to create a bride for him in the original novel. And
the Mary Shelley?
Yeah, the original Mary Shelley novel.
I remember that.
And so he's constructing the woman out of the body parts he's gathering, and he sees the monster like looking at him through a window, and his mind starts to play out, well, what happens if these two monsters mate and they create like this whole society of creatures that are much stronger than normal humans and are as prone to murder, since I think he'd already, done some killing by that point. And so he like freaks out and he throws the body parts of the woman out the window or onto the floor and enrages the monster, and that's when their war really kicks up a notch. So that image of these body parts just flying around, it's like, oh shit, for I think it was like a Scholastic book or something, and so for them to put that kind of graphic imagery in my mind was probably, you know, bent me a little bit. And so, like I said, they had the Power Record of Frankenstein, but they would also advertise in the back page, there was a shot of Dracula biting the Werewolf by Night, the Marvel version of the wolf, and it was really nice, striking artwork. It was really cool. So I always had an interest in Werewolf by Night, but I never really got to read anything substantial. And then a while back, they did a Power Record podcast. I think it was Rob Kelly with his usual partner, Chris Franklin, talking about it. And what they do is they would actually play the Power Record, and then they would talk about it afterwards. And I fucking hated it. Oh, it was so terrible. Jack Russell was such a whiny little bitch. And it was like all the worst things about the Lon Chaney Jr. movies ramped up to 10, as far as like hating the lead character and the lead character having no real agency and completely surrendering to the Wolfman. And there's all these ways you could get out of it, including the most obvious, just kill yourself, which they resolve in Monster Squad. They make it clear that that wasn't an option to him, but it was never made taken off the table for Lon Chaney Jr. So it just really turned me off hearing that after, you know, having liked werewolves as a kid. And, you know, there's some great imagery with Werewolf by Night, in particular after Bill Sienkiewicz saw The Howling and redesigned Werewolf by Night to look more like the Howling werewolves, yeah, where he was basically an upright, full-size werewolf with the giant ears and the big fur. And those Moon Knight comics are really cool to look at. And the character also had a series of short stories in Marvel Comics Presents. And I know at least one or two of those were drawn by Samuel Clark Hallbacker, who is this guy who looked a lot like Neil Adams. He was definitely from that school, but more softer and more sexualized. He liked drawing women that were very voluptuous in various states of disrobing. So it looked fucking cool. And in those stories, Jack Russell became a biker. Basically, he finally made his peace with being a werewolf, and he was able to control himself to some degree in that wolf form. And he's like traveling around the country, sort of like Renegade. In fact, dressed very similar to that
Lorenzo
too.
Lamas.
Yeah, because if Hallbacker was the same guy who drew the early issues of Nomad, if you all remember those.
Vaguely.
Yeah.
So those were pretty cool stories where he's a biker and he's embraced it, and he's traveling around the country and he's fighting like other werewolf gangs in different parts of the country. But especially when I try to read any of that 70s stuff, and I think, oh, you know what? There's one other thing too. I think he was a member of the Legion of Monsters. That was one of the early comics I got from a flea market as a kid. Do y'all remember Legion of Monsters at all?
No.
It was the Avengers of Marvel's monster characters. It was like, I think it was Werewolf by Night. Yeah, it was definitely Werewolf by Night, Morbius, Man-Thing, I think Ghost Rider, and maybe like one other guy who's slipping my mind. But if I remember correctly, specifically, it was either Werewolf by Night or Morbius. There's this godlike being, kind of like that Steranko story that shows up, and he seems like he's going to make everything right with the world, utopian, but he seems like maybe he has some dark motivations. And one of those two ended up biting the guy and either killing him or infecting him, and it totally screwed up, you know, this guy's plan. So that was another instance where, wow, Werewolf by Night's cool. And then you go and you try to read the old comics, and ugh. And I tried to read one or two recently, and I just couldn't get into them. But I think it's supposed to be like one of Count Druncula, Ryan Gailey. I think he said it was like one of his favorite series of all time.
Oh, really?
So, sorry. But for a few years ago, Fix-It loaned me this miniseries of his, this Max series, and it's a total like revision of the character. It's a new story, and I think it's self-contained. I don't know if anything came out of it, but I thought it would be a good thing for us to read on Halloween.
Yeah. So basically, issue number one starts with sort of a flashback sequence in like early 80s, I think it's like 83, and it's a raid on a building, and it says something like 57 people died that night. It was the bloodiest massacre in Wisconsin state history. So basically, they're raiding this house, and there's just freaking extremely graphically torn apart people everywhere. Like, this is what the third panel of the first page really sets the tone for the other four issues, three issues, plus this issue, four issues. So they're going around, I mean, and they talk about how, this was crazy. Okay, so it says, the beast wasn't picky. Adults and children, men and women, infants and the infirm, all were slaughtered. Yet it didn't gorge itself either. It sampled a few choice parts and then quickly moved on to find other prey. And like, they're showing a picture of this dude in like a recliner, and he's just like part of his rib cage is sticking out with all of his intestines spilled out in his lap. It's freaking crazy. Anyway, so they mentioned that there was like one room with an infant, and the infant had like a little bit of blood on its forehead, and that was the only thing that basically survived in the entire town. Fast forward, it's now 2009, and our good pal, this is Jack, right? Is his name?
Jack Russell, yes.
Jack Russell, he's kind of consoling his wife. She's obviously pregnant. He's saying, hey, yeah, you know, I got to go out on business. And she's like, oh, hey, you know what? This has got to stop because the kid's coming. You got to find a different job or this can't. He goes, oh, yeah, yeah, I already told him. And really what it is that basically he's been lying to his wife for all these years saying it because whenever...
hasn't been that long. I think it's in the second issue. They make it to where they were only together for like a year and change.
Okay.
Before he knocked him off.
So it's only been like what? It's like two, three days a month or whatever.
Yeah, he's out.
When the freaking lunar eclipse happens or whatever, and that's when he turns into Werewolf by Night. So basically, he spent like every dime he had constructing this steel bunker in this building that for 2 or 3 days out of the year he goes to so he can wolf out. And what I thought was kind of
strong
cool.
enough that he can't claw his way out. It's got a digital lock that's like time set. I think it cost him like $40,000 to get it built. It took him years to save up for it.
Yeah, and what I thought was a cool kind of interesting twist is that he mentions, let me turn pages here, folks.
Physical comics, not that digital stuff.
Yeah. When it's time for him to leave, there's a, oh man. Yeah. So whenever he snaps out of it, there's a message scrolled in blood on the wall that says, let me out. And basically what's happening is, since he's essentially going, you know, into a blackout state as the wolf comes out and the wolf knows he's trapped, they're showing you the wolf isn't dumb, right? The werewolf isn't dumb. So he's basically like stabbing himself and writing messages. And he even talks about how he's contemplated, you know, answering back, but he would just basically tell him, you know, go to hell or whatever.
No, he just chose not to.
He just has never wanted to converse, but because there's a message there, he's putting the connection together that there's a possibility that then he could write an answer and that he could have this conversation with himself.
Yeah.
It was kind of a cool, different way to look at it, that with the wolf was literally writing messages to, you know, I thought it was just kind of a different way to look at it. But anyway, so while he's locked in the box for that first time, he's kind of telling the story about the first time he wolfed out was on his 18th birthday, and he basically was out with a bunch of friends, and his family for the first time said it was cool
always
for him to go out.
Weird, awkward kid, never was popular, and that was like the first time he was willing to let his hair down, and he let his hair out of two apparently.
Ooh, wolf hair, y'all. And basically, he woke up in his house covered in blood, his parents murdered, with scrolled on the wall saying they lied to you, Jack. And after that, he went on the, you know, kind of on the run, became a nomad. And then at the end of that issue, they show him walking back to his apartment, and there's people tracking him. You know, there's like a lady behind him on the bus, and she's, you know, they're all communicating with each other, showing you that there are people definitely following the Werewolf by Night, and they know who he is. Oh my god. And then of course, the end of the freaking issue, he walks into his apartment.
He's wolfed out, and he's been let loose from the bunker.
So now it's like, oh honey, I'm back from my business trip. And he walks in, and his wife's freaking gutted. His formerly pregnant wife is gutted on the floor, belly ripped open, and it says it was a girl scrolled on the wall in blood. And he like collapses to the floor and is like, no way. I you know, like, because he's trying to, obviously it looks like he did it, because it's got the wolf writing shit on the wall. Obviously she's been torn apart by some sort of animal, but he's like, but I've been locked up in the freaking thing, how could I have done this? Anyway, and that's how it leaves issue number one.
Yeah, I remember while you were reading the book here today, you got to that and you were like, oh my god.
Yeah, that was not expecting that. Especially, I mean, this whole first issue, they're literally just ripping people apart. Like, at one point the freaking wolf does like a thunderclap on a guy's head, but it's like his nails go into both sides of the dude's head. Like, extremely, extremely graphic stuff. But I was not expecting that final page, sir, in this first issue.
Alright, so I have issue two of Werewolf, Dead Werewolf, Dead of Night.
You don't need to say, they're all Dead of Night, Werewolf by Night, okay. Issues 1, 2, 3, and 4.
And so where mine starts off is kind of where Max leaves off, where they're walking through the, I guess a government agency comes through, and they start finding the bodies, they're finding the scribbling on the wall. Now, I read
I think they're showing too, that they've been cleaning up these messes for years, and there's this long gap of like 8 years where they didn't find anymore.
I'm assuming it's the same organization that's been following him for a while. You get a sense that they know what he is, and they're just keeping an eye on him from a distance. And they're not interacting. Now, I got these from Fryhole a while back, and I remember reading these, and I remember when I read them, I thought there was a continuation of the Paul Jenkins stuff, and I was way off.
Yeah, well, I knew as soon as it's like, oh wait, he's married with a kid. Yeah. It's like, this is going to be something different.
And again, the artwork is great. With these, he's actually on the run in issue two, so he's making his way. He's trying to figure out again,
because the cops think he killed his wife.
Yeah, they killed his wife. Yeah, but at the same time, he's trying to figure out who killed his wife. Like you said, he was locked up. He's like, I'm believing he's always assumed he was the only creature running loose, so he never thought there could be another one. So he's kind of, you know, trying to piece it together. Let's see.
And I like too, he's
self-medicating himself quite a bit.
Yeah, well, one of the big things too is he just becomes a homeless guy.
Yeah,
and it's the way he's able to disappear. He can't get out of town. Basically, there's too many people watching him from different places. So he grows out his beard and he lets himself go fallow. And within a few days, he's stinky and hanging out in subway tunnels, and like nobody's paying him any mind because he's not the clean cut dad that they're looking for. But he's seeing his wife everywhere because
he's having flashbacks. flashbacks.
Yeah, well, not just that, on all the televisions and all the newspapers, they're constantly talking about him and her and, you know, this monster that killed his wife. He's supposed to be like a Scott Peterson type, but worse.
And he's annoyed because they keep getting his story wrong, right? They said we met in a bar, we met hardware store and things like that. Like, he's very cognizant of all things kind of swirling around him, and he has to just stay low and can't do anything about it. And he also makes comments about how the wolf's in him, so he can just eat some scraps out of a trash can and that'll last him a few days. He was shot at by the cop before he dove out of a window, and his bullet wounds healing up and stuff like that. So even though he's not the wolf, he's kind of has some of the properties.
The abilities, yeah. And of course, you know, the government agency is determining whether they're going to snatch him. Because like you said, he's homeless at the time. He's just basically living off the streets, trying to get town to town, staying ahead of the law. And the organization in one panel shows that they have another wolf, something, a wolf-like creature tied down. And they're determining whether they should bring him in. And they're saying, we're close by, we're going to get him soon. At this point...
And they're going through his paranoia too, because he's like, well, I'm going to wolf out here in a few days, so I need to go back to my bunker. But if the cops are going through my apartment, they know I've got a bunker. So do I risk going there and them catching me, or do I risk wolfing out and killing a bunch of people?
Now, there's not a whole lot of dialogue, so that's the only bad thing about these books. I mean, they're a lot of image-driven story. But finally, one of the agents confronts him, who has these scars across her face, and basically says, you know, we know what you are. We've always known what you are. And he's kind of freaked out a little bit by it. I was trying to find, there was a really cool line I remember reading. Well, anyway, they follow him back to one of his locations where he has the steel cage where he's going to kind of put himself in for the night. They're kind of hinting that, you know, they're going to pick him up eventually. He goes in to go into his locker room. He goes into the basement, gets there. And the room that they had, I think in issue one, they showed building is demolished.
Well, that's his
bunker.
Panic room or whatever he's built.
And he just freaks the fuck out. He starts freaking out.
Yeah. Read what he says.
Yeah. Because he thought, okay, oh, maybe they're going to be cool about this. And then, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
No, he literally says that though. What is it? Read what he says.
Yeah. Because it's a Max book. He says, oh, fuck, or something along those lines.
Nowhere to hide now. It's the end. It's what?
No. I mean the line when he walks in and sees the place all demolished.
Oh,
yeah, that demolished.
Oh, you fuckers. You lousy, lousy fuckers.
That's what he said. I thought he said something funnier than that.
No, he basically turns on the switch and the room is just demolished. And he says, oh, you fuckers. You lousy, lousy fuckers.
Okay, yeah, that is what he said. That's my bad.
Yeah. But right at that moment, they attack him. The government agency comes in. They do the old G-Man thing and they inject him with some knockout potion. The soldiers come in. They're all geared up. He's slowly passing out. And now he's starting to have flashbacks as a child. Now, should I give it away?
Don't give up what's in that issue. Don't give up what I'm going to cover. So.
Well, he starts seeing images of doctors talking to him, injecting him, people talking to him as a child. And he's starting to kind of, have these little flashbacks of a life that he doesn't remember. And of course, at the end, you know, he passes out and he wakes up the next day. And then all those soldiers who are around him are dead. They're dismembered. Everyone's murdered. And on the wall, again, in blood, they should have used more medicine. And so the werewolf, almost kind of like the Hulk thing, where if he's endangered, the wolf will come out.
No, I think what happens, they capture him as a human still. They knock him out with the medicine, and they think he's going to be out. And then apparently he manages the wolf out in this airplane. They've got him
super strong or something.
Yeah.
So I always wonder, because I always love that about the Hulk, was where if he even tried to commit suicide before he hit the ground,
right,
he'd Hulk out.
Well, that's what they do in the movies.
No. I think you'll have to part out. When he sees they fucked his shit up, he goes and he calls the number the chick had given him, saying, hey, you can call us and we can help you, right?
Okay, sounds about right.
Yeah. Because he said he could feel his fingers burning.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry, you're right.
He was like feverishly trying to call them because he can feel his fingers starting to change.
Yeah, you're
right. The whole reason he went to the rooms because he was about to wolf out.
Yeah.
It was his time of the month. And that's why he's like, I'm going to wolf out. And they're like, don't worry, we got this medicine for you, bro. And then that's what the wolf's saying. They said they should have used more medicine. So that's why he wolfed. He wolfed out because it was time for him to change for the month.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, yeah, I missed that.
And they managed to suppress that medicine somewhat, but not enough. And he wolfs out and kills everybody on an airplane.
Well, yeah. Well, it doesn't really show an airplane.
Well, he goes to sleep on a truck. And
yeah,
in your issue, you find out he was actually in an airplane.
Oh, okay.
And the plane crashes.
Yeah, so in issue 3, Jack Russell wakes up. All the bodies of all the people, including Scarface Chick, are around him. And the message left for him is, go to Jordan. Pilot is alive. And he actually even drew an arrow in the people's blood toward the cockpit. So Russell starts approaching the cockpit, and the dude comes out, and he's totally the guy from Pulp Fiction. Die, fucker, die! But he doesn't actually come out shooting. And so initially, Jack's able to convince him, hey, look, I don't know where the wolf is. I'm a survivor. You know, chill out. And the guy like thinks about it for a second. He's like, wait a second. No, you're the werewolf. But that gives Jack time to knock the dude out. And then he starts to wolf out again because it's now at a point where they no longer need the pilot and the wolf wants to come out. So then you have a splash page of the crash plane. And for once, too little gore, because you'd think if you crashed the plane, there'd be a lot of wreckage, a lot of bodies strewn around. But instead, it's just the pilot on the ground with his arm ripped off and the gun still in his hand, and Jack walking away wearing a leather jacket with his bare chest exposed.
Yeah, the plane crash was a little anticlimactic for a plane crash.
So he's walking and he finds what's essentially a ghost town, Jordan, Wisconsin, and he finds a room and he's digging through the trash and they discovers, so he specifically says, years of living on the streets taught me that people often throw away the very thing you need. And what he needed was some lipstick. And he writes on a wall, why do you want me here? He lies down and he manages to go to sleep at 1:35 a.m. And by 2:14, he wakes up and he thought he'd just been out for a few minutes, but he'd actually been out long enough for Dude the Wolf out and then leave the message, she's here, carved in wood on the wall. So this repeats throughout the night. Who? The other. I don't understand. Go to graveyard. So Jack goes to the graveyard and he realizes that all the tombstones are, or the majority of them anyway, the end date for all these lives was 1983. And he starts getting flashbacks to that night as an infant, realizing this is the town that was killed and I survived or was the sole survivor. So then in the graveyard appears another werewolf. And one of the things that's kind of cool with the miniseries is that they try to take the Werewolf by Night design from the 70s, which was very closely resembling the old Lon Chaney Wolfman design, and sort of update it. So he's got the shorter hair and he's more humanoid looking, but he's fuzzier and he's nakeder. And so then this other werewolf comes along and she actually looks more simian and somewhat more distorted. So you're actually able to tell the two werewolves apart because pretty quickly a Jack wolfs out as well. And this other werewolf isn't attacking him. It's sort of sniffing him and it seems to recognize him as one of her own. But the once he wolfs out, he totally gives in to anger and rips the werewolf's arm off with one big nasty swipe. And then he stops and starts sniffing his own claws, his bloody claws, you know, kind of getting a sense of the gore and realizing that he has a connection to this werewolf, that he's starting to get like memory flashes of stuff related to the big massacre that occurred in 1983. But before he can fully appreciate that, these Black Ops soldier guys show up with their laser sight and start shooting him with high-grade sedatives, knocking him out. And as he's passing out, he sees that the other werewolf was not only a girl, but he hears what the soldiers say, holy shit, not every day you see a guy, you get to trank a guy who's tried to decapitate his own sister with his teeth. And that's when the flashbacks really start to coming hard and heavy. You realize that as a boy, Jack Russell is driving in the back seat of his car with his parents, and he's imagining that his parents are Russian spies, and they're taking him to experience torture, and he's seeing this doctor that had appeared throughout the miniseries that was giving him injections as a child, and he didn't know why they were taking his blood or shooting him up with whatever they were shooting up with. But it always happened at this place called the Babylon Group, enhancing quality of life for all. And that's where he's taken back to. And also throughout the series, there's been this mysterious doctor who's sort of been controlling the various organizations trying to capture Jack Russell. And it turns out that the evil doctor is in fact Lance Henriksen from Aliens, Pumpkinhead, Terminator. The likeness isn't as strong in the earlier issues, but by the third, fourth issues,
There are a couple panels of like, oh, that's who that is.
That's totally Lance Henriksen, yes. And so Lance is basically walking Jack Russell through this facility. And you see there's actually a whole host of beings that are trans-special or say use some sort of terminology like that. Mm-hmm. You see like a roach woman with her tits out and some creature that has like see-through body parts, kind of like those old anatomy statues, models from when you were a kid. There's a guy who looks sort of like a gill man. And so basically this group isn't of the government, but they're associated with the government. They're clearly well-financed and their whole thing is they take these beings in and give them some semblance of a life as, you know, appearing to be benevolent. And then you see Jack and he's taken to see the corpse of his sister.
The doctor even says, we cured polio.
Yeah, like, we just can't. We don't tell anybody. Yeah. Jack wants to see his sister's body. And he goes to touch her face and that connection gives him these tons of flashbacks. He sees that he wasn't the person who slaughtered everybody in this town was his sister. And she basically, you know, she wolfed out. She didn't know he was coming. Nobody knew he was coming at the time. She kills all these people, but then she's captured by this government group who basically almost kill her. So she's near death, but what they find is they're able to preserve her life for enough time so that Jack can get old enough for them to start taking blood from him. And the blood they're taking from Jack is helping to keep his sister alive. But the blood also creates a connection between the two of them. So even though she's in a comatose state, she's still seeing the life that Jack is living, the hardships he's going through as an outcast. Yeah, he's an outcast. He's the scrawny, weird kid, most likely to be a serial killer, that kind of bullshit. And so she's like almost giving him words of advice, mumbling in her comatose state. And so it turns out what had happened is his parents were Russian defectors who had been assigned by this organization to raise him as their own child. And after 10 years with this kid, they decided they liked him, even though they initially named him Jack Russell as a Jack Terrier Joe. And so he does kill his parents, but only because the wolf thought that his parents were setting him up to die because the doctors had decided decided to go ahead and terminate him, that he was getting to be too dangerous to them. And they didn't want to kill him, but because the wolf misunderstood, the wolf ended up killing the parents and allowing Jack to escape. So at the end of the third issue, we see that Jack's daughter is still alive. She's being kept alive by these scientists. And basically, she's going
Jack's
to use...
Jack's daughter, that was ripped out of his wife in
right,
the first issue.
Right, right. And so...
There's a lot of daughter-parent stuff, so you got
to
try and keep
thank you. That's probably wise to assert. And so they're saying, you know, if you want this, a lot of the people who are like you die. And in fact, you're the only male werewolf that we know about. The, you know, your sister was one. All the other ones we were aware of were females. You've got a daughter here. And you're maybe the only person who can keep her alive because she's not going to survive without you giving her your blood the way that you had been giving your sister. And so we move on to issue 4. And that's when we get like the final major flashback of Jack seeing through his sister's eyes and learning that, you know, she loved her family. She didn't want to kill her family. But what had happened is that she couldn't control her wolfing out. Her dad freaked out, didn't realize what had happened, was trying to kill her. She tried to stop him from shooting her and inadvertently killed him because she didn't know her own strength. And then more and more people kept coming after her and she just kept killing her way through everybody. The one person that she didn't want to have hurt, though, was her infant brother. She loved him terribly. And he was the one person who wasn't in a position to come after her. And so that's why she painted him with her blood on the forehead, because she somehow sensed that that would create a connection between the two of them that's feeding this exposition. It's a great way of having this major exposition that wouldn't be able to happen otherwise. But let's be honest, it's just this major exposition drop device.
That was the panel right there where it was like, oh, that's him.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's so Lance Hendrickson there. I've totally photo-referenced. But eventually, the sister, even though they've been barely keeping her alive, she finally gets enough strength to wolf out again inside this facility, and she goes looking for her brother because she sensed that the group was coming after him and she wanted to protect him. But in trying to track his scent, she ended up finding the wife instead, and not understanding what she needed to do, she goes digging for her brother inside the belly of the wife and finds the daughter. So the government men find, you know, catch up with her in time to save the little girl and then recapture the sister. And they've been trying to use both to help bait Jack Russell so they could bring him into the fold. And even though they're trying to say over and over again, look, this is for your daughter, we're trying to just help your daughter, it's pretty clear through some of the intonations that the intent is really they want to use him. They've got plans in mind for him, and they know leveraging his daughter will help to keep him under control. But because he has access to his sister's memories, he realizes, no, you guys are full of shit, I know what you're up to. So he basically cups his daughter like a football and starts trying to work his way through an obstacle course of scientists and their various devices against him. They gas him, they unleash a couple of other monsters they had under their keeping. Mm-hmm. One kind of looks like Morbius with a more full beard and like no compunctions.
You mean a vampire?
Sorry, Morbius living vampire, and totally just wants to suck baby blood, and so he's trying to protect his daughter from that. And then there's a female Frankenstein creature who just wants everyone to be quiet and is perfectly happy to rip shit up to make that happen. She does manage to basically rip the werewolf's shoulder out of its socket and the bones sort of sticking up out of the skin.
So I thought those were the shout outs to all the movie monsters. You had your gill looking fishman earlier. Mm-hmm. Now you got your Frankenstein, you got your vampire Dracula, who looks like Russell Brand.
A little bit. I can see that, yeah. So eventually a werewolf is on the ground. It doesn't look like things are going to work out for him, but Lady Frankenstein punches a hole through the vampire dude.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, and then the werewolf unfortunately has to rip off her jaw, rip off her head, rip off an arm just to kind of chill her out. So once he gets through that, he finally makes it out of doors, but unfortunately there's Lance Hendrickson, this other female scientist, gun-toting type person, and they say, in case you're wondering, no, this isn't loaded with silver bullets, but the buckshot has been treated with a special chemical we came up with. Your sister helped us with the testing. She said it burned quite badly. And then blam! And not only did it hit him, but you see some of the buckshot hit the baby, mm-hmm. which really bothers you as a reader. You know, it's like, you fuckers. And so they finally cap Jack while he's on the ground. And it's like, wow, this is going to end. You know, this is the darkest timeline here, right? But then flash forward 10 years, it's 3:15 in the morning, and his daughter has been raised by surrogate parents the way he was. And the daughter's like, I had a bad dream, mommy. What did you dream about, sweetie? I dreamt about my real mommy and what you did to her. And starts ripping the shit out of her mommy. And Jack has basically realized that the blood that was spilling all over her as he was being battle damaged gave them an even stronger link than he had with his sister. And she herself was just a stronger werewolf in general. She was already had come to some of the same conclusions he had. He realized that when he allowed himself to become the wolf and sort of merge with the wolf, that they both were working at the same purposes, that they both had more clarity, more control, more power. And his daughter knew that intuitively. So as soon as she's basically hitting puberty, she's got like like full fun werewolf abilities. And so he's saying it brought out the wolf in you much earlier than expected. I gave you an understanding I never had, and it's given me something too. Beneath my restraints and the shroud of narcotics and tubes and wires, it's given me peace because I know I'll be seeing you soon, and I can't wait. And the last panels are Lance Henriksen, another decade older, having lost his hair, being attacked by a little werewolf. And then they go back to the child's family home with her dad ripped to shit in his bed and scroll to the wall. I'm coming for you, daddy. The end. So what do we think about this?
I thought this was a terrific little gruesome four-part story. I thought it was an interesting take. I mean, look, we fucking seen everything you fucking see about werewolves, right? Nards don't have nards.
Yeah.
Drive accurate NSXs, everything. I thought they came up with some new gimmicks in this that it felt
very Howling.
Yeah, but honestly, as somebody who has seen like four of the Howling movies, I think four or five of them, this was better than any of the Howling movies.
Even the first one?
Even the first one.
I kind of like the first one.
The first one's cute, comedy.
Do you even see the wolf ever in the first Howling?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
When they go see the tribe.
Doesn't it like take a long
time? They tease it throughout much of the movie. You see a lot of like headshots and silhouettes and stuff. You don't see full on wolves.
Well, at the end when they're escaping, you see them, the full, and I guess, was it claymation or?
No, I think they were in suits, but they did have the canine back legs, so maybe there was a mix of there. I know that, I think it was Rick Baker who did that when he got a lot of props for that.
I really liked how
the similarities between this story and the fucking...
I think he's just pulling out the few, because let's be honest, there aren't a lot of good werewolf movies. Usually they're hampered by budgets and special effects and such.
Yeah.
Teen Wolf 2. I mean, come on. There's
American Werewolf in London's fantastic.
Go.
But that's the thing, though. Everybody's saying names, and I'm going to throw
Ginger... Jack Nicholson one.
Oh, Ginger Snaps.
Wolf was fucking horrible. Ginger Snaps is awesome. I love the Ginger Snaps movies.
Del Toro was a pretty good one.
No, that was a piece of shit.
I liked it.
That movie was garbage. We went and saw that. Me and Paquita saw that in the movie theater, and it was just dumb shit. They were doing the same stuff that happened in Wolf between Jack Nicholson and James Spader, where the wolves were bouncing on trampolines at each other.
Yeah.
It was so fucking terrible, except that one had the CGI to boot. Let me put it to you this way. I would rather watch Van Helsing again than fucking the wolf, man. At least Van Helsing had Kate Beckinsale in those tight pants, and it had like cheese factor, camp factor. The wolf man was just fucking lame. And I thought that Benicio del Toro would bring some serious game to that role, and no, there was nothing there. It was shit. And Anthony Hopkins, what the fuck was that guy doing in that movie? God damn.
Well, the reason I always bring up The Howling is I've always loved that ending where she decides she's going to show everyone that werewolves really exist and decides to wolf out in front of everybody.
On live television,
And then right at the end when her fiancé is about to shoot her, what do you see? A hamburger thrown on a grill, slowly grilling. I just always thought that was just a cool image.
Joe Dante, he was a great director. Yeah. But the problem I have with The Howling is there's like 10 or 15 minutes worth of really good movie. It's a fucking awesome poster. I love The Howling. Is one of my favorite movie posters of all time. That shit fucking haunted me as a child. You remember the movie poster?
Is that the one where there's tears in it?
Yeah, it's like a wooden door, kind of like the whole thing from The Shining, but instead of it being an axe, its claws are ripped through it, and you see this like anthropomorphized wolf screaming through the blackness at the outside the door. Love that fucking poster. But the movie itself, it's not that great. And then fucking Howling 2. Oh man, that movie's a shit.
Which is the one with the marsupials? That's the one last one.
That's like the fourth one. Oh okay. Yeah, the marsupials was awesome too. Werewolf kangaroos. So
they're based off the Tasmanian devil. They're supposed to be like the offshoot of Tasmanian devils or something like that, if I remember correctly.
There's a werewolf coming out of a kangaroo pouch in the fucking movie. Okay,
yeah, I remember that.
That
one was insane. The worst or the best? I'm not. What are you guys trying to say?
Well, like, book wise, I mean, this is a solid book.
Oh no, I
can't
this was
think
more
of any other
than solid.
I think it's better than solid.
When this is 2009 and you are, I'm getting original Wolfman material out of this.
This would be a fucking awesome movie. I mean, because I remember reading an issue of Amazing Heroes, and there was an article where they were basically listing the top 10 worst characters to adapt. And apparently, one of the stories this guy was telling is that somebody had actually come to Marvel and tried to pay them licensing money for Werewolf by Night. And somebody at Marvel was like, why are you doing this? Werewolves are in the public domain. There's nothing special about our feature. You can just go off and do this. It was a rare moment where somebody was actually just going to be willing to level with people who are giving them free money and are obviously too stupid to realize. Just make your own fucking werewolf movie. Who gives a shit? You don't have to pay us for the idea. We're stealing it from Universal, you know? But this is actually a strong enough story. If this were made into a film, I would want to see the shit out of that movie, man. And it's got the cursing. And honestly, it's almost needless, though, because it really is like a film on paper. All the gore's there. The artwork is gorgeous.
Absolutely.
Sumptuous. It reminded me a little bit of like early Phil Winslade. And there's some Doug Braithwaite in there. And it's photo reference, but it's not the kind of photo referencing where everybody looks like a zombie.
It's not static.
None of that Uncanny Valley bullshit.
It's got, well, it's got a few little moments that are like that.
Moments
but
there.
That's nitpicking.
Mike Diodato, that's another one that you could compare this to. But it looks great. The gore effects are great. The storytelling is good. You could take the script straight out of the comic and put it on film, and you're printing money, man. It would be awesome. I don't know if you could budget for it. If you could, you just really have to make two good werewolves, and you don't have to feature them for all that long. I think it would be an awesome fucking movie.
Yeah, including the ending, where it's like, oh, you think it's this bleak ending, and then you do the not stinger, but you know, the just right before the credits, and you see the little girl riding in the car, and you find out they've got him all tubed up in the freaking thing for a decade.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great. So, like, even like the panic room that he goes to a couple times a month, that's all new stuff. I don't remember any Wolfman story where he figures out the patterns of his wolfing, even though you can look at a fucking calendar and figure out when you get your full moons, right? Mm-hmm. He figured it out, so he's trying to find a way to cope with it and stuff. I mean, the blood communication I thought was cool, that his poor tortured sister who had looked over him so much was still when he was an infant, but she's still almost getting these news reports via the blood transfusions and how he's growing up. This, I mean, just tons of just really interesting stuff.
It's additions to the lore that kind of work, you know? I mean, I think the blood aspect probably feels a little bit more vampire-y, but I don't care because it gives them the opportunity to tell us what they want to tell, and I'm really enjoying that story, so I'll allow it.
Yeah, I like my wolf stories when they have packs. I like the interacting of a pack.
Well, that's just it, though. You're seeing the formation of a new pack, you know, between this father and daughter.
Mm, I enjoyed it.
I'm just surprised that the dark, gory, profanity-filled book is the one you're like, eh, and we're like, yeah! So
it's a Max book. I mean, you kind of expect it to come from... I really didn't think it was that gory. I mean, there's body parts.
There's a fair amount of viscera.
You tossed through it too quickly if you didn't think it was that gory. You're out of your fucking...
Well, especially because it's done so realistically, too, so it doesn't feel like cartoon gore. It's like, ooh, that's real guts, and those are organs that are hanging out of this person.
Yeah,
so.
and he took enough time to... it wasn't just blood splashes everywhere. He's drawing organs and intestines and things like that.
This is George Romero hard R werewolf shit here.
Okay. I mean, there's no argument. You're not looking correctly if you think this is not a gory book. Don't fucking shrug at me. Holy Jesus, don't fucking shrug at me.
Do we know if they did a second part to the story?
I don't think so. I think this is self-contained. And the Max line, I think, was kind of going out by this point.
Oh, okay.
Because they'd started Max in the early 2000s. And I think, when did Punisher Max end? It's been a fair few years now.
Well, you have to remember, they had different runs. You had Welcome Back, Frank, which I don't believe was a Max. It was Garth Ennis' first run. And then...
No, you're right. You're right. The one that he did with Steve Dillon initially wasn't a Max book. That was, I think, a Marvel Knights book.
Yeah.
And then...
Then
it went Max... with a different artist. Who started that one? Do you remember?
That I don't remember.
Okay, but that's where they went full on adult with it, and we're doing like the Steve Dillon miniseries was more humorous.
Yeah.
They drew a lot of inspiration was drawn from that miniseries for the Punisher movie that Thomas Jane was in, but they didn't adapt it very well. It didn't really work when
they tried to pull off the Russian,
And by that point, Punisher Max had already started, and everybody was like, no, we want this movie to be made. So.
Yeah, because that one they were tackling like more relevant.
Yeah, more
issues.
Realistic stuff.
Yeah, I remember the slavery. One was a really good
that one's
trade.
A bleak fucking miniseries arc, I should say.
So I want to say about then that's what I mean because I remember you're right, there was a lot of little miniseries that would come out, but they always seem to be horror based except for the Punisher one.
And you know what else too, it occurs to me, what else happened around 2009 and then around the time Disney bought Marvel?
Was it 2009?
9 or 10 thereabouts,
so they probably ended it.
That's probably
that would make complete sense.
Yeah, so this is probably one of the last ones out of the gate for Max,
because that's Disney will go so far, but I don't think Max series is something they would want the mouse attached to.
Well, I mean, Disney does some darker stuff too. I think the issue is that it's a Marvel Max and that it ties into the Marvel universe.
But I'm trying to think, like you said, I'm trying to think of other Max series if they were over sexualized or anything. I can't.
The sex was never really that big. You know, they were never very comfortable with that. Like I said, they did Shayna and they all they did was show her tits, and they even covered that up for the trades.
Yeah.
They showed some kind of booby-ish stuff in here. It's really more nipply type stuff. I mean, when you've got a girl cockroach with no areola, does it count? I don't know.
But is it hot? Hot? Hey, guys, girl cockroach.
Hot or not?
Hot or not?
They did a pretty decent job with it. Actually, there's a girl cockroach independent comic book out now called Rochelle, where she's running around in like belly shirts and stuff. It's like, are you really trying to sexualize cockroach girl?
Rochelle, an erotic journey of a young woman from Milan to Minsk.
Nice.
That's too much Seinfeld, folks. I apologize.
No, actually, you made me freeze it for a minute because like I've got a pretty good education on softcore pornography thanks to 1980s cable and Reynolds. So I was like, Rochelle, how did I miss that one? Oh, because the Seinfeld restaurant. Okay.
And you know what's her? Who was the queen of all those freaking movies?
Emmanuel?
No.
Oh, that's
the blonde.
There's a lot of fucking blondes in softcore porn.
Got her whole fucking.
Sybil Danning, maybe.
But getting closer.
She an actual porn star?
No, because none of those people weren't stars. It was softcore. They were all shitty actresses.
Oh.
Can you name a movie she was in?
All of the Cinemax movies ever.
The Happy Hooker?
Who did you just say a second ago?
Sybil Danning, who was also in The Howling 2, a.k.a. Sherba, the she-bitch.
Yeah. The one with the teeth.
Your sister's a werewolf.
The teeth.
I think, what was it? Peter Cushing was in that one? Or not Peter Cushing. Not Carradine. Which one was it? Christopher Lee. Christopher Lee and Sybil Danning. And Sybil Danning in that ridiculous, leathery, bondage-type stuff. And you have the werewolf sex.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. That was disgusting.
The orgy, you mean.
It's amazing. Well, it's amazing how a movie that...
Elizabeth Fairchild. No?
Yeah. You're talking about...
hold on. It's coming to me. What?
If you think about it, Fairchild was the soap opera actress. She was on Knott's Landing. She was in that...
She went to Skinamax movies after that.
No, she did one like kind of creepy Skinamax-y horror movie called like The Stalker or some shit.
Dude, you are so frank right now, dude.
Oh, no, I welcome this.
But anyway, the best thing about Howling 2 is the song. I do love the shit out of that song.
What song?
By the pale, pale light of the moon. I've got a hunger that... Heather Fairchild. What is her name?
Morgan Fairchild.
Morgan Fairchild, thank you. No, there was one movie from like 81, 82 where she's getting stalked by some peeping Tom guy and they had a pretty copious amount of nudity in that one movie. But after that, she went on to Knott's Landing and she spent
I just saw that one a lot.
Yeah, she spent years on that circuit. Bo Derek did a lot of those type of movies and she was like borderline respectable thanks to Ten and Tarzan and the Ape Man.
Bolero, I think.
Bolero, yeah. The one where she's like in her 30s playing a virgin. Yeah, sure, honey. But she was
hot.
Pretty
hardcore. That one's on. I don't want to say Netflix, maybe Hulu. One of them. Caught it.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but I did spend quality. Yeah, I spent some quality time with that movie in the late 80s, though.
He courted that that VHS tape.
Were going steady. Well, that was pretty impressive, guys.
Lord.
You guys were both rattling off some... I'm embarrassed, but at the same time, very proud to know both of you.
I got to make sure to put the Howling song at the stinger for this one, yeah.
I always remember that the ending where she's about to wolf out and you see the little puppy dog nose. She's like... And I guess her was her
fiance. Yeah, she sort of looked like a
Chewbacca. Looked chewy.
Chewbacca. What are those dogs
just
that
the
have
ending? I'm sure it's on YouTube.
Yeah, what are those dogs that have too much hair on their faces?
And
they're like little small dogs, and they're just too more hair than they have body.
Mac, no, not coming to you.
You know, they're usually
shih tzu?
Like brown.
Shih tzu?
I don't think it's a Shih Tzu, but they're like very small, compact, and they have like long hair on their faces and long.
That's a Shih Tzu.
Is it a Shih Tzu?
It could be a Shih Tzu.
Yeah,
maybe so. But anyway, she looked like one of those like lap dogs.
But she's like. I guess what would you call that? Saying she was whining,
whimpering,
and then he blows her away. And then for some reason, there's a hamburger being cooked. Oh, that's right, because the sister at the end, they're at the diner.
Wait, how many fucking Howling movies is there a keg of hamburger being cooked at the end of the fucking movie?
That's just the first one.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm pretty sure.
So you
she
just
gets blown away. You see a patty all of a sudden being cooked.
Wait, are you talking about the Sybil Danning werewolf? Or are you talking about the mom from Cujo werewolf?
Mom from
the first one. Okay,
yeah, remember? Because then they're cooking a hamburger. And I was thinking, what the fuck? And all of a sudden, the sister who you thought died that was having the orgy.
Okay.
She's at like a truck stop and they're eating hamburgers. And I was like, dude, this is so fucking bizarre. Like the ending it was almost this really weird ending.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking I like that ending.
Howling's a movie. I remember the beginning of it pretty well. And
I remember the ending very well.
I'm about to watch the ending.
Well, the
right
cool
now.
Thing with the Howling at the beginning is because she's an investigative reporter.
Yeah.
And it's
rapist guy. And it turns out he's the werewolf.
Well, and not only that, but it's she's going into one of those booths.
Adults, yeah.
In the adult room. So you're like, it's already fucking creepy.
And he's
so
supposed to, and he's going to interview her, or she's going to interview him there, mm-hmm. or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good movie, dude. I still say, I mean, you're right. I'd say a good 20 minutes
about,
of good
it's
movie.
It's about 20 minutes of good movie, and the rest of it's kind of a snooze. The parody of the resorts, like the hippie commune shit, that shit gets old pretty
quick. It was kind of cool when they show that full moon and you see the wolves howling at it. And like you said, they had, at that time, they were going for the werewolf with the canine legs, really tall. They look like they're pulling 7 feet tall, easy.
Oh, you know, the other thing that's famous about the Howling 2 credit sequence is they keep showing Sybil Danning's top getting ripped off throughout the credits.
Oh, really?
It's like they'll show you clips of things in the movie, and then like in one of the beats in the Howling song, howling tits, howling tits, pale, pale, pale light, howling tits, howling tits. And it literally is like the same shot over and over again.
Well, Welcome to the Marvel Superheroes mailbag.
I'm the D-bag, he's T-bag.
Facebook likes Grant Richter, Ryan Daly, and Ally Bats. Google Plus follows The Hammer Strikes. Google Plus shares nothing. Google Plus ones The Hammer Strikes are episodes devoted to the Token Fire Guy, Siskoid, Curtis the Shadow, SDCC 2016, Tiger 2-in-1, Ghost Rider, Doctor Strange, Daredevil, The Mighty Thor, and Batman v Superman, Dawn of Aquarius. WordPress blog follows Buddy2Blogger, The Way of the Cat, WordPress blog like Clint Walker. Tumblr follows Martin Gray, LinkedIn. Martin Gray, we don't have a LinkedIn. We keep telling you this every freaking month.
Oh, no, that's not a current. I needed to get that off of there.
My bad, Martin.
You chastised them for nothing.
Sorry, Martin. Tumblr like / reblog, also nothing. Martin, why don't you stop trying to link in with us and go down to our Tumblr like reblog? The fuck, is Tumblr still a thing? Who owns Tumblr now? Didn't somebody buy Tumblr?
I don't know.
Jesus.
See, I stopped doing much with Tumblr because their links aren't permanent. So I was using them to have our images, and then they would change the codes, and I have to go back and redo it. So I said, fuck it, and just put everything on PhotoBucket.
Yeah,
unless I'm doing like a big image deal like I did with the gay cap episode, it's not worth the trouble.
10-4. New Twitter follows Alasia Abad, Amelia Michael, This Freaking Show.
Yeah, I'm actually, don't skip past that one. I updated a lot of the stuff on this one, but I didn't get to do very many of the follows. So that's why we have so few follows. And like, skip that and just focus on these two right here. Follow Fridays came from Glenn Walker and Unearthly Visions. And then the retweets.
We got retweets from Ange, Between the Pages, Cash Flag, aka Al. Is that Al or A1?
I believe it's Al.
So he's not Steak Sauce. Comic Reflections, Epic Film Guys, Firestorm Fan, The Hammer Strikes, Luther Menet Blissett, Relatively Geeky, Two True Freaks, Professor Alan Middleton.
No. Keep going.
Shit, sorry. Twitter favorites.
Like I said, I didn't get to finish editing this one, so that's why there's... What I'll do is I'll leave people that have done it previously, but I don't have a record of them doing it this time until I know for sure they didn't do it, and yeah, that's what those are, so...
Twitter favorites. Sin Mystique, David Fiore, David Gallagher, David Golding. David's a... You seen some stupid song about that last time?
Yeah, from Kids in the Hall.
Oh, these are the days I know. Right. Okay. Horror by Proxy, Jake and Tom Conquer Podcast, John D. Knoll, is that Mia Judkins? Mia Judkins? Nethead, Ryan Daly, Sean McLaughlin, Sons of Darkness, Zaki Hassan.
And now we've got comments.
Our first comment comes from Paquita Trotamundos. Congrats at World Spine, # International Podcast Day. You guys are great. I assume Paquita's
Paquita.
Irish.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Precious magically.
Here, let me read it in Paquita's voice. Happy International Podcast Day. You guys are great.
Bollocks.
Our next comment comes from Count Druncula, Ryan Daly 01 on the Twitter, if you guys want to contact him. This is on episode number 54, Marvel's Captain America Civil War 2016. Lots to go through this episode, so I'll probably have multiple comments. First point. As to Zemo, I don't think... I swear we have done this fucking comment.
Not for Civil War. You're thinking of Deadpool, that we haven't done Civil War.
No, man. Okay.
And okay, maybe you listened to the Civil War episode of Film and Water podcast too, but these are different points than what was expressed on the podcast.
Okay, first point. As Zemo, I don't think they need to ever bring him back again. I'm fine with him going into the box and staying there. However, if they decide to revisit him, his objective doesn't have to change, kill the Avengers, but he'll need help next time, so he finds Abomination, who is also still alive as of the Incredible Hulk, and now you've got half of the Master of Evil. Get Justin Hammer to build a new Crimson Dynamo, maybe get Enchantress from somewhere, and introduce Wonder Man. Zemo might be the only human, but shit, so is Nick Fury. Make Zemo the anti-Fury recruiting villains for his anti-Avengers team. Aunt May equals Amil. Aunt Mil, right?
Okay, perhaps, right? Yes.
Best part about casting still sexiness Marissa Tomei is Marvel/Sony can do the Aunt May's gonna marry Doc Ock story from the comics, and it won't be totally ridiculous. Just regular ridiculous. Rob Kelly, Chris Franklin, and I reviewed the movie too for Rob's Film and Water podcast, so I mentioned a lot of my thoughts there, and he posted a link that you can find, and have probably already found, because this is an old comment. One of my biggest concerns going into this movie was Black Panther. I know Frank and I were on the same page about this. When Marvel announced that Sony and Disney would share Spider-Man, and that the Web-Slinger would debut in Civil War, we were bummed because we assumed he would steal Black Panther's thunder and a good chunk of screen time. That turned out to be not the case. In fact, the writers confirmed they wrote very early drafts of the story with Spider-Man in it, and it was only when they thought the deal with Sony would fall through that they decided to beef up the Black Panther's role at all. And nobody steals anything from T'Challa. Nobody steals anything from T'Challa in this flick. Quite the opposite. He's a constant scene stealer. Not only does he have badass action scenes and an impressive entrance both in and out of the costume, but he also carries the emotional weight of the story for the first two-thirds when everyone else is fighting over the language of an international character. T'Challa makes the story personal until it becomes personal for Tony and Steve, at which point T'Challa is able to distance himself from his emotional turmoil and actually get the fucking job done by thwarting the villain. I love Black Panther's fighting style. I love his movement. I love his movement. I love the fact that he had a jet that followed Iron Man to Siberia without being spotted. I loved his accent. And Chadwick Boseman played T'Challa as cool as a cool-ass cat when he first speaks to Black Widow. That's a pairing I want to see more of. And holy shit, the Dora Milaje. I always pronounce that wrong. Dora Milaje?
I don't think we know how that's actually pronounced. Mm-hmm. I always say Dora Milaje.
Well, it's definitely not how I pronounced it first because I think I added letters that don't exist. I hear Frank's argument for the events in Age of Ultron and Civil War rob Black Panther of an essential element of his origin. This one served as a mini origin for Black Panther. Now in his solo movie, he can get to the point faster. That's referencing the Claw's appearance, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's still plenty to explore in the movie, like how his powers work, the ceremonial rite, the geopolitics of Wakanda, etc. And he still has two villain candidates in the wings, Zemo and Claw. But I'd be just as happy with him introducing a new villain, like a version of the Man-Ape or Eric Killmonger. As for Spider-Man, I'll try and talk about him in another comment later, but I think you guys are too critical of his appearance in the movie because you don't like character. Fair. Well, sort of not seeing Spider-Man at all because you hate him. This was probably the best case scenario for you. He had two scenes, not counting the post-credits stinger. For the first, a nice little meeting with Tony. They explained who Spider-Man is without stealing anything from his origin that belongs in a Spider-Man movie. The same thing that Frank argues were taken from T'Challa's origin weren't taken from Spider-Man. No mention of Uncle Ben's murder, no mention of the radioactive spider bite, no explicit with great power ... line. The writers let the audience figure that shit out because we know, and because those things belong in a Spider-Man movie. And we got to see his spectacular powers bounce off the other characters, which added new energy to the Avengers, who often come down to punching and smashing things during fights. He's not an Avenger, and I don't think they'll make him an Avenger until he's of legal age at least. He appeared not to be a team member, but is part of the classic Marvel team up. If you hate him, okay, but you gotta admit, if he had to be in the movie, this is the way to do it.
I wanna say that one of the cool things about the Black Panther movie is that it is going to be so black because every single major casting announcement has been people of color, and I think that Martin Freeman is going to be like this white speck in the midst of all these black people, black heroes, black villains, black supporting players, and the fuckers that were losing their mind over Luke Cage don't know what the fuck they got coming, and that is going to be goddamn glorious.
People were losing their mind over Luke Cage?
Yeah, they're fucking, the show's too black, man. There's all these stereotypes, there's crooked cops, why is it always a crooked white cop, and just fucking dumbass shit like
glad
that.
I haven't heard any of that yet.
Yeah, it's fucking so dumb. So when this is a major it's not like Luke Cage, these guys can ignore if they really want to, but they can't get away from Black Panther when that shows up. And like the villain, you've got Michael B. Jordan is playing Eric Killmonger. You've got I don't remember who they cast, but the guy, and I'm sure they're not going to call him Man-Ape, but Man-Ape is in the movie and it's a black actor. You got Lupita Nyong'o, who I believe is playing his sister. You've got the Dora Milaje. You've got, it's just black. So it's gonna be the blackest Black Panther movie they can make it, and that's bad motherfucking shit. I love that. I love that Marvel's got those kind of stones that they're willing to go there now.
Question: so you know there's that whole controversy over what's that latest Disney movie that came out?
The Samoan guy?
Samoan guy, right? So they have these Samoan costumes out there, and people are all upset and up in arms because they're gonna have little white kids dressed up as Samoans.
It's Samoa face.
They're calling it blackface, right? Is that gonna happen with Black Panther costumes?
Well, it's already been a bit of an issue because I think it was Target or Walmart where they were advertising the Halloween costumes, and they've got a child's costume and a little African-American child is in the T'Challa costume, and they have an adult Black Panther costume, and you can look at the necks like, oh, that is a Caucasian wearing a Black Panther costume. And I think personally, I think it was subliminal. I think they were trying to tell white people it was okay for them to play Black Panther. But there was some issue taken with them advertising white guy as Black Panther. So it's already begun.
Damn.
Yeah.
Do we have opinions on that, or are we going to just not talk about it?
I have a real nice, long, exasperated sigh.
Oh, okay.
I'm just going to and then we can just move on from there.
Okay, cool. Our next comment comes from Siskoid. And anyways, about Spider-Man. Yeah, okay. I'm with you. If Spider-Man was going to be in the movie, that was definitely about as good a Spider-Man as you can have in the movie.
We're going to have to go ahead and commit to an Amazing Fantasy 15 episode in the relatively near future, I think.
Yep, I think so too.
When is Homecoming out? Is that next year? Okay.
All right, next comment comes from Siskoid. On number 54, Captain America Civil War. Ryan and I had similar thought about Zemo, Matches of Evil, or leading towards Thunderbolts movie. Always fun listening to you guys talk about movies, but if I focus on movies not yet made or even announced, I would love a Secret Wars movie for sure, but when I look at Marvel's other crossover events, they don't really rate. But I hated Civil War, and the movie was great. They looked just enough to make it echo, but changed all the bad bits, so it's not necessarily a problem. Secret Invasion was lame, and the Skrull would have been keen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe if FF reverted. Obviously, Atlantis Attacks would give us Namor. Nope, can't come up with a cool crossover event on that side of the aisle, probably because I wasn't a Marvel fan during the Consensus crossover event era.
Yeah, you guys can actually help out with that, because I wasn't a big Marvel crossover guy either. When Marvel really went apeshit over the crossovers, I was already at DC, because it all started with the X-Books, and so I can remember those, but that's not relevant to the MCU. So what crossovers would you guys suggest for adaptation? Anything?
Dark Reign was good.
I could see Dark Reign, although you'd have to replace Storm and Osborn with somebody else.
But yeah, but that was a really good one. The Skrull Invasion was kind of cool.
But they don't have the Skrulls, the problem.
That's
so
right.
You have to have another set of aliens. You could do maybe pre-Skrull War and replace the Skrull.
Yeah, but then you'd have to, some other shape changer.
It doesn't have to be shapeshifters, though.
That was the whole thing of that book, is you have these heroes popping up.
In Secret Invasion, true, but I'm saying with Kree-Skrull War, you can have another two alien fighting. So, yeah, that's an option.
Mm-hmm. In a way, they're doing one of the fucking Infinity crossovers, right?
Yeah, they're doing essentially Infinity Gauntlet, which would be one of the more obvious ones to go for, since that's probably after Secret War is one of the best crossovers that stood the test of time, even though it's really not that good. But then really neither was Secret Wars, ultimately.
I think it's just more known for its high... It had more memorable moments.
It's Thanos. Everybody remembers Thanos.
You remember
the glove.
You remember
the gauntlet.
You remember the finger snap.
And also you remember Thanos Quest, which was really brilliant. Better than Infinity Gauntlet.
Was it? But I wonder, they're going to do the Infinity War or Gauntlet, but are they going to bring in Galactus?
No.
Or Chaos?
They don't have Galactus.
And that's the thing that sucks, because that was the cool thing about that book, was you had all these immense, powerful galactic characters come to Thanos and he snaps his fingers and they're nothing to him. Even Lady Death has to bow to him.
Yeah.
And that was a cool buildup, where that's when you realize he has all this power and now he's bored. Like, there's nothing to challenge him.
Yeah.
And then he kind of self-sabotages himself as usual.
Well, I'm wondering if they're not going to pull a DCEU where we're going to get introduced to all this cosmic shit via Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet.
Maybe.
I mean, it might be easier to make them more digestible. Maybe they'll take the time to actually introduce them so you have an idea who the in-betweener is. And maybe they'll work the in-betweener into Doctor Strange or Guardians of the Galaxy. So
a crossover. I can't think of any really. Most crossovers are always X-Books related.
Yeah, Onslaught Saga. Great one.
Following the Unes was okay.
Well, it's like one of my favorites was Acts of Vengeance, but they haven't built up enough villains. To really
there aren't
enough
villains. True.
They get some Masters of Evil action on would be cool.
What was that? Vengeance? Acts of Vengeance?
That's what I just said.
He just said Acts of Vengeance.
I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. I'm trying to think of, because I can't think of any of them that aren't besides those. Wasn't there
The Crossing. That's where they bring in...
The Executioner one was X-Men.
That's where they bring in Channing Tatum to replace Robert Downey Jr.
Colin Farrell. That's your guy.
He's too old now, man.
Yeah, you think he's too old? At this point?
He's
he's not as old as fucking Robert Downey Jr.
No, but he's still old. I think when they replace people, they're going to go super duper young.
Teen young.
They're going to go Riri Williams or whatever her name is. They're going to replace him with a 15-year-old African-American girl.
I can't think of any.
So basically, no. We're going to say no. What about like Contest of Champions you could do?
That's fun, but there's not much of a story there. It's all about
matching up with Secret Wars. It doesn't need to be. You're taking the concept of converting it to a movie. Contest of Champions, we're pitting all these heroes against each other.
You could definitely do something with, what's that dude's name? The Elder of the Universe that bind that? Games Master.
The Games Master?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I could see that. What would be nice, actually, especially if they could get Adam Warlock in there, the Magus, having the Magus story play out, but involve more heroes, which ended up happening with Thanos anyway. You just sort of combine the stuff from Thanos that they don't use in the Infinity movies, and you do that with Magus. Universal Church. You could do a lot with that cool theocracy, conquering and stuff. And that you could get the Guardians involved in that, too, which would be pretty cool.
You could actually just do a Guardians movie about that too.
Yeah.
Like Guardians 3 or 4.
Actually, what was it? The Galactic story arc.
You're talking about the one...
We did a fucking podcast on
Annihilation.
Annihilation.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of already doing that, though. That's what Guardians is really I think.
You think so?
And they don't have Annihilus anyway, so they'd have to kind of play with that too.
Yeah.
God, that sucks. It's amazing. We grew up, we're not fans of the Fantastic Four, but so many of the cosmic concepts come out of Fantastic Four that it really blocks.
It's because Fantastic Four villains are like fucking Bob Dylan songs. They're way better in everybody else's books. Doctor Doom is way better anywhere outside of the Fantastic Four. Annihilus is better outside of the Fantastic Four. Yeah. Galactus is better outside of the Fantastic Four.
I don't know if he's better.
Silver Surfer is better outside of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
You just need other people to sing Bob Dylan songs and I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Huh? Check it. Did it do it?
No, we're good.
You're good.
You're good.
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Hey, you good, man?
Yeah, what's up we do?
All right, good, man.
Okay, we can probably carry on.
Okay, go ahead. Read one. I've read everything.
I read almost all of the fucking mail. Okay, anyway. Episode to episode.
Less bitchy, more talky.
Okay, let's see. So, Keith G. Baker on episode 54, Marvel's Captain America Civil War. Excellent show as always, fellas. Other than Frank's 5-minute look at libertarianism through his Mao Tse Young tinted glasses, you guys were on point with your review. Keep up the great work. Y'all are fucking brilliant. By the way, I don't like Spider-Man or Wolverine for that matter in my Avengers soup either.
Yeah, Franklin's get political as fuck in our podcast.
Gets his little soapbox out.
Gotta get that soapbox out. That's why we love him.
Ange wrote of episode 56, Satana, the Devil's Daughter. I don't have much to add about Satana other than it all sounds interesting. It did remind me of the Lady Demon episode and the earliest Tigra stuff you covered. But I will comment on some of the Watchmen Rebirth stuff. The only before Watchmen books I bought were the Cook affiliated ones. For one, I trusted Cook as a creator, but more importantly, I thought that the topics of his two series, the Minutemen and this young Silk Spectre, were the only characters that I felt needed that I needed to know more about. I didn't need to know anything more about Ozymandias, Rorschach, etc. Their stories were complete. If I had to pick one, I would recommend Silk Spectre. It is a trippy look at Laurie in her college years. Connor's art is brilliant, and there are a lot of mirroring homages to Comedian's story in Watchmen, which resonate given we know she is his daughter. I thought Rebirth was a good chance to shake things up in the DCU, which had been too uniform in its grimness since the New 52. I like a dark comic as much as anybody, but the whole universe can't be like that. I find it odd that Johns is being ballyhooed as a savior when he scrawled as much darkness with his pen as anyone. Wasn't he the one who wrote Forever Evil, which was supposed to root for the less nasty villains? I really don't need to see the Watchmen actually exist in the DCU. Use the Dr. Manhattan excuse once to explain things and then move along. It is a stupid but effective reset, but I took a more meta approach to the Watchmen and the Rebirth issue itself. It is because of Watchmen and Dark Knight and erroneously Kingdom Come that DC thought it needed to make things more mature, vicious, etc. That hand of Dr. Manhattan did influence creators, editors, bean counters. You could say they were to blame, so why not acknowledge it? Anyways, great show. Can't wait to hear the tape but not edited Tigra episodes. If we could ever get the goddamn Red Wolf done, we could get into those episodes.
Red Wolf.
I'm Dr. Red Wolf from the UTMB.
That's a throwback.
He's passed away. Our next comment comes from Grant Richter, Unearthly Visions. On episode 57, The Double Life of Private Steve Rogers. At least Marvel has given us a decent reason why Cap is now a sleeper agent for Hydra. So I guess it's common knowledge now that Steve is young again because a sentient cosmic cube made it so. What is CA?
Captain America Steve Rogers number 2.
Captain America Steve Rogers number 2 reveals that the Red Skull at some point previously convinced the cube that Hydra was the good guys. So the cube altered reality to have retroactively made Steve one of what it considers to be the good guys. I'm honestly okay with this. As long as you give me reason why something is so instead of just leaving it with because we say so, I'm usually good.
I have nothing to add. I want nothing to do with any of that stuff. So.
Look, man, he's been a werewolf. He's done drugs. It's fine. He can say how Hydra wants and it'll get retconned out. Get over it.
I know it will. I have no interest in seeing that journey go forth. So
10-4.
Count Druncula on number 57, Double Life of Private Steve Rogers. Captain America's love interest never felt serious or believable to me, but not because he was secretly homosexual. To me, Captain America will never settle down and have a lasting romantic relationship with a man or woman because Cap doesn't have a personal life. This was something Whedon tried to explore in Avengers Age of Ultron, but he didn't know what to do with it. There is no Captain America without the war, and there is no Steve Rogers without Captain America. Steve's not his alter ego, it's just the name he was born with. He doesn't fundamentally change his persona when he puts the outfit on. The Super Soldier Serum didn't change who Steve is, just what he looked like. Steve, not just Captain America, but Steve is a warrior. He's not going to settle down and commit to someone, male or female, until he can stop fighting, which he can't ever.
Is that the end of comment?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the only man that Captain America loves is one Uncle Sam.
So you're saying he's got a sugar daddy?
Yep.
He likes the way that beard tickles his taint?
He's got a thing for star-spangled hats. And he loves that rolled-up sleeve look. All right, our next comment comes from...
It does give new meaning to Uncle Sam Wants You.
Oh. But also kind of our next comment comes from Count Druncula on our episode 58, Wild Agents of Marvel, Curtis the Shadow. Is the new Wild Agent of Marvel episode the one you recorded 2 years ago? That was... he meant to put / snark after that because he's totally being snarky.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Curtis the Shadow, who was a avid listener 2 years ago, was also a podcaster like a year or so prior to the episode actually airing, but he also really loved the cosmic shit, and we've totally fucking dropped the ball on the cosmic shit.
Yeah.
We will pick up that ball before Infinity War, though.
Correct. And time for the Marty Marvel Magic Society. In Belfast, the 108th Sage, Adam Blackmoon, Chris Sheehan, Coffee and Comics Blog, Comic Social Club, Darren and Ruth Sutherland, Dr. G Nerdologist, Geek Yogurt Podcast, Glenn Walker, Goldmine Productions, Good Times, Great Movies, The Invisible Manix.
There are a number of Halloween variations on people.
I don't want
time.
You to pick up my Trump sniffing. The Invisible Manix, It's Plastic Man, Joseph Crawford, Keith G. Baker, Kevin Dodgy.
No one respects women as much as you do.
Nobody does. This Nasty Woman, KSCGFS.
Oh, that's the King Size Comics, Giant Size Fine podcast.
This is a Nasty Woman.
Kyle Binning.
Kyle Binning. What is it again? King Size Comics,
Giant Size Fine podcast.
Mikey Ghoulish Flash, Monsters and Mystics, Odell Amber Dracula, Oscar Blue Devil, Pietro Blaximoff, Poop Culture Podcast, Rabbit Stew Comics, Randy Caldwell, Richard Field, Ryan vs. Frankenstein, Silver and Gold Podcast, Son of Cthulhu, Trekker Talk, Oofda, Unearthly...
That's Fryhole.
At Fryhole, yeah. Warlord Worlds, Unearthly Visions, Xenozoic Xenophiles.
The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. The views expressed in this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
Like they rip the they rip it off.
Yeah, he's watching it.
Oh, that's the first one. Yeah.
No, I never seen her eye. Mi gente. She looked like a fucking Chewbacca. And he's gonna yell at her. That Denny just stuck with me. I was like, dude, this is so fucking rare. How did that one? Okay, what was the Howling 2?
That's the one where they go to Europe.
I don't remember that one. So what was the marsupial one? Yeah. What was the one with the marsupials? That was like 4 or 5. That one, I remember the special effects were horrible, like cartoonish. Yeah. Well, no, the only one I remember is they have some big dude like strapped to a chair, and they're doing these imageries, and he's slowly turning into the wolf, like they're coaxing it out of him. That's the only thing I remember. Can we think of any other good comic books that were werewolf? Are you talking about that song? But is that the song you were talking about, Frank? Nah, it just sounds pretty decent. What was the movie that Julie Andrews showed her boobs? No. The one where they're doing a movie and it's where they're making a movie and then all of a sudden they decide to go X-rated with it.
Do they?
Just because it's free doesn't mean you should watch it.
Yeah.
We're done anyway. We can stop this now. We don't have anything else to say, right?
Okay. No. Boobies.
Kick him in the nards.
Boobies.